This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line coming to you three wide on this Football Friday. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm, the VP of Operations here at the Circa Resort and Casino, and also Mike Pritchard, our VSiN NFL analyst, played nearly a decade in the National Football League, former first-round pick, also a national champion to the Colorado Buffaloes in the early 90s. Gentlemen, how are we doing here on this Football Friday? Week two, we're now into the routine of things.
Yeah, I thought our first week together was terrific, so there's a lot of expectations.
Right.
On topping the show.
They at least let us come back, so that's a good sign.
Still on the rails.
Well, we have a lot to talk about, including the Buffs, another great performance, mm-hmm. and some storylines out of yesterday as they take on their in-state rivals. A game with some storylines last night, and then a lot of interesting questions for week two. What are overreactions and what are justified?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, looking forward to the continuation of the league or the season, because I mean, Seattle, Pittsburgh wet the bed last week. Mm-hmm. Looking for them to correct things along the way, hopefully this week. And some teaser opportunities. I thought like last night was a great teaser opportunity for me to anchor a teaser that I got. So all in all, great start to the season, I think. Obviously, Colorado is the headline situation. Mm-hmm. We continue to be the headline situation in college football. But yeah, all in all, no complaints.
I'm surprised you don't have your sunglasses, Pritch.
Well, I almost did. I did wear black and gold. But see, that's prime, though. That's not me. Yeah. You got to stay true to who you are.
Well, he got them for the whole team. I'm not sure if you saw that video on social media.
Yeah.
Sunglasses for the entire team. Said that, hey, they look
probably
good.
Probably sponsored, by the way, too, right?
Probably. So we'll get into that coming up in hour number two. Also in hour number two, our lone guest for the show, Dan Leberfeld, over at SiriusXM, Jets Confidential. We're going to talk New York Jets. They have a big one down in Dallas coming up this weekend. But of course, the news from earlier this week, Aaron Rodgers tearing his Achilles is out for the rest of the season. How will the Jets respond with Zach Wilson back at quarterback? We'll ask Dan that coming up at 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 Pacific. But let's start with last night's game, Thursday Night Football. The Philadelphia Eagles beat the Minnesota Vikings 34-28. This was an interesting betting market. It opened around 8, 7.5, closed 6. Here at Circa, you guys closed 5.5. It lands on 6. Myself, I laid 6.5. Whoopsie, didn't get the best of the number, lost that game. But what'd you guys make of last night's game between the Vikings and the Eagles? Eagles moving on to 2-0. Vikings now in the dreaded 0-2 hole.
Well, it's interesting because if you were the Vikings, a lot of questions after losing at home to Tampa Bay in week one. Were they answered here? In some ways, you could say yes, but yet you're still 0-2. Mm-hmm. And behind the eight ball, we all know the statistics about teams that are 0-2 to start a season, how hard it is to get to the playoffs. Now, 17 games now might affect that. And from an Eagles standpoint, I think there's still questions, although they had a lot of injuries, questions on the defensive side of the football. And in terms of this division, with Dallas being so impressive on Sunday Night Football, who should be really the favorite to win the NFC East?
Yeah, no, it's a great point there, Mike. I mean, I think for the Eagles, and they were saying this during the broadcast a little bit, you know, they're not clicking on all cylinders. They got a new offense coordinator. And certainly Jalen Hurts is working through that. The offense is trying to work through, solidify an identity that way. You know, they can run the football. We know that. Swift is incredible. They block well up front. But can they be prolific throwing the ball? And they're going to have to be at some point if they want to win a Super Bowl, right? And certainly not turning the ball over too. But defensively, like Mike was talking about, you know, situations there with some injuries. But I liked what I saw in terms of game two. The reason why I put them on a teaser, though, was because I thought this was going to be a tighter game, and it should have been. I mean, it was already just one possession. It came down to that. The Vikings, though, revealed themselves to me. And here's what I mean. Madison, he is not better than Cook, right? We knew that.
Yeah, he ain't it.
But the Vikings were trying to tell us that, okay, we can get rid of Cook because of money reasons or whatever, and then we're going to be okay with Madison. No, you're not going to be okay. You got cheaper, but you didn't get better. If you're supposed to get cheaper, you're supposed to get better. That's what the draft is for, right? And then on top of that, I think from a defensive standpoint, Flores is just trying to do way too much. They're trying to win. They're trying to be competitive. But the front office, to me, wants to turn this roster over. So you have a difference in thinking right now with that organization. It's playing out to me at the 0-2 start with the Vikings.
Mm. Yeah, and I think this Vikings team, it's the way you look at the schedule, their first 8 games or so, it's tricky. This thing can really get off the rails mm-hmm. if they can't get a win upcoming next week. We'll obviously talk about that game next week when they take on the Los Angeles Chargers, almost called them San Diego, the LA Chargers at home down 0-2. But I think from an offensive coordinator standpoint, Pritchard, I'm curious to get your thoughts on mm-hmm. this, because Brian Johnson, now the OC after Shane Steichen right. has left to become the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. To me, through 2 games, Jalen Hurts doesn't look all the way comfortable. And I don't know if it's maybe the play calling or if they're just trying to figure out what they're going to do to get onto the same page. Or maybe it's the other team's defenses that have been game planning for this Eagles offense all throughout the offseason. From a play calling standpoint and from an OC standpoint, like, where are you at with Brian Johnson and this Eagles offensive attack? Because I wasn't that impressed last night. Once again, 5.7 yards per play against a pretty below average Vikings defense.
Yeah, I was saying that to myself too. Brian Johnson's got to get into some rhythm. He's got to assert himself as a play caller. Obviously, a quarterback's coach, he's highly familiar with the personnel. Mm-hmm. He's highly familiar with this system. Brian Johnson quarterbacked this at Utah. He did that. Same thing with Shane Steichen, quarterbacked this system at UNLV. So he takes over play calling. To me, play callers are talented coaches. You know, anybody can call plays, right? We sit at home, well, we can call that play. We can call this play. But how you sequence plays, though, and how you set up other plays, how you create looks, you know, that takes talent. And so I thought Brian Johnson did a good job of that, featuring Devonta Smith a little bit, right? Some mm-hmm. one-on-one situations, some formations. They always want to take advantage of numbers. That's part of the option game with this offense, with this style of play. But is he Shane Steichen? No, he's not, right? And that's something that Jalen's trying to get used to. Now, Jalen can help by asserting himself and saying, look, this is what I want to run. This is my offense now. It should be his offense. This is what I'm most comfortable with. This is what I feel like we can be successful with, or I can be successful with. So they'll iron that out. I think the launching pad for the Eagles right now is okay, but I think the Eagles will iron that out. Brian Johnson will get better along the way as well.
You know, one of the pivotal plays in this game was at the end of the first half. And this sparked all the rage on X, or formerly known as Twitter, was when Justin Jefferson caught the pass there. And the Vikings were only trailing by 3, I believe it was. He fumbles the ball into the end zone. Touchback. Eagles end up going down the field, getting a field goal. So a bad beat for our friends on the Vikings plus 3.5 in the first half. Sorry to everybody who had that. But that play sparked a lot of people calling for touchback is the worst rule ever. And I tweeted, I said, you know what, guys? The touchback is actually the best rule in football. Secure the ball in the money area or get off the field, like the rule states. Well, VSiN's own Matt Brown went and responded to me on X saying, hashtag worst take. Now, this has come to my attention, thanks to you, Mike Palm, that earlier this morning on a numbers game, which you check out here on VSiN, 10 to noon Eastern time, 7 to 9 Pacific, that Matt Brown was on a numbers game with Gil Alexander talking about the touchback rule. Here's what they said earlier this morning.
I know we're not supposed to have, you know, inner company, like shots fired and stuff, but then Femi came on the Twitter machine and said best rule in sports and said that get inside the red zone and protect the ball or something or whatever. And I'm like, that's the worst take I've ever heard in my life. Like, what are you talking about? Could you imagine? Okay, so we're playing basketball, right? And if you turn it over in the paint, the other team gets to go down and shoot a free throw. Like, you know, I mean, like, it's essentially the same. Like, it's essentially the
it
same
makes
thing.
No
like,
sense.
Like, why? And you just be like,
what's
because,
the logic?
Yeah, you know, because
is not a good
because.
Answer.
And it's like, yeah. Wait. So if I turn it over in my red zone, they get to go shoot a free throw. It's like because.
Okay, hold up.
I'm sorry. What?
Hold up. Do you guys have a concession stand that can come in here? Because I'm going to get my popcorn ready for his response right
so,
now. I need some refreshments right
once
now.
Once again, I thank you, Mike Palm, because I did not see this morning when this was live. And this is my first reaction to seeing that clip there. They could not be more wrong. In basketball, if you turn the ball over in the paint, guess what? The other team gets the basketball. You don't get the basketball and get to take it out from half court, like we mentioned before the show started. What in the world is that take? Like, is it the best rule in football? I'm probably exaggerating a little bit, but I think the fundamental rule of football is that the end zone belongs to the defense. I know that we talk about offense and scoring points and yada, 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 fantasy football, prop bets and all that stuff. Cool, whatever. But the end zone belongs to the defense. That is what they are trying to protect. They're trying to protect you from scoring in their end zone because that's how points are scored in the National Football League. And if you fumble the ball into the end zone, the ball goes back to the defense. They don't get points. They don't get to go ahead and kick a field goal on the other end. They get the ball at the 20-yard line. That is how the rule is made. And if you do that and you fumble the football into the end zone, why would you ever get the football back? Why? Like, the end zone is precious. That is what the whole game is based on, is protecting your own end zone. That's why they call it end zone, because you need to protect it. And they fumbled the ball into the end zone. What? I don't get why people are so confused by this. Maybe I'm off base. Like, why is everyone confused by the touchback rule?
I'd like to hear your take on it.
Well, first of all, the fact that he did that with a smile.
Kudos to you. I couldn't even believe the analogy. I'm like, they reinvented another rule in basketball.
Right.
And I like Matt and Gil, but like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, make it take it pretty soon, right?
Yeah. In basketball. I was like, what do you mean? The other team gets the ball in basketball. What are we talking about?
You know, the thing is when you do fumble the ball, what's the alternative? Like, is the alternative is to spot the ball where he fumbled it and give the ball back to the offense? Yeah. I mean, is that the alternative?
Well, the argument is that at any other point on the field, they do bring it back to the spot.
Yeah, because that's the sideline. Right. That's not the end zone.
It's not the end zone.
What are we talking about?
If you go through the rest of the segment, they suggest that since it's at the goal line, you go back to the spot and a 10-yard penalty. Mm. So you'd be taking the ball back.
But now we're creating more rules.
And
we're making football different, though. That's what we're
doing. How do people not understand the difference between the sideline and the end zone?
I think there's some argument here. I mean, you're like saying that it's the best rule in football is like the guy that countersues. You're only countersuing because you got sued. You couldn't take these people saying that the rule is ridiculous.
Because they're out of their minds. It's not a ridiculous rule. They're literally out of their minds.
Is it the best rule? Is it the best rule?
A little bit hyperbole.
10 yards is the best rule.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
Fumble the ball outside of the end zone, get it on the 1-yard line. Like what planet does that make sense? There is a difference between the sideline and the end zone, and if you don't understand that, I can't help you. We will try to help you on the other side. The Lombardi Line rolling along. I'm fired up on a Friday for no goddamn reason. Let's go.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSEN, the Sports Betting Network.
Football is back in full swing with another week of epic games. And who's got you covered on the action for every single one of them? DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can bet $5 on football and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Get in on the NFL Week 2 action with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the app now and use code VEGAS to sign up. New customers can bet just $5 and take home $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code VEGAS. The crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out on a Football Friday at the Circa Resort and Casino. Femi Abebefe, Mike Palm, Mike Pritchard here, hanging out with us here. It's been a fun first hour. We will put the NFL off to the side here momentarily as we discuss a little bit of college football, because, of course, the whole college football world has descended upon Pritch's old stomping grounds, Boulder, Colorado, with the Colorado Buffs. The story of the college football season through 3 weeks now. They are at 2-0, hosting Colorado State. This is a nice little late night kick for our friends on the East Coast here, coming up on Saturday, 7 o'clock East or 7 o'clock West Coast time, 10 o'clock Eastern. And I'm looking at the betting market right now, where Colorado over at DraftKings is a 24-point favorite, total sitting at 63. Does Coach Prime, Shador, and Travis Hunter kind of keep the ball rolling, Pritch, here, or can Colorado State make this closer than the market thinks?
I'm nervous that they can make it closer, to be honest with you. I said this before. Here's the thing. Like, this is a Rocky Mountain Showdown. It's typically on campus. It had been moved to Denver.
Mm-hmm.
To Mile High Stadium, tried to get a neutral crowd and all that. Rick George, our athletic director, is like, why are we losing that revenue on campus? I mean, look at it, right? Today, we got all kind of revenue happening. So it goes back to campus. I played in this game and fully didn't understand what it was about. So here's what this is about, right? Yes, all these in-state players that want to go to CU, but they can't go to CU because CU's too good. And this was when I was there. So they ended up going to CSU, right? Little brother, if you will. Mm. And they always were scrappy, like a little brother. They were all, and certainly as players, our prize was the Big Eight, trying to win that and trying to get to the Orange Bowl. Ooh, CSU, right? We'll take care of business, right? But they always gave us a game, though, because this is their bowl game. This is everything to CSU. And I'm worried that with everything that's going on with Colorado and the prize being next week Oregon, the week after that SC and the Pac-12, that will the focus be there during the week of practice to where this number could be in jeopardy? Like, I think the Buffs will win the game. I mean, they're too talented. And certainly we were able to pull out a game. I scored a winning touchdown my sophomore year.
Hey, now.
Now that was in Fort Collins.
Elliot, pull the clip.
We drew that play up on the sideline on in the dirt. That's how we had to pull that thing out of a hat. But CU and what Coach Prime has done is he has captured all these great athletes in terms of keeping them focused. So if you are so inclined to lay it, good luck. But I am nervous about this particular week that is sandwiched in between those two big games that CU has played and the two big games that's on the horizon for the Buffs.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of one of those proverbial sandwich spots, one might say here. Now, I think that would have been the case if not for Colorado State head coach Jay Norvell opening his mouth. Of course, everybody has seen Deion Sanders' press conferences right now or throughout the season. He wears the shades. He wears the hat. Sometimes he wears a hoodie. And Jay Norvell had this to say earlier this week, talking about Deion Sanders, said, quote, "I don't care if they hear this in Boulder. I told ESPN I took my hat off and I took my glasses off. I said, when I talk to grownups, I take my hat and glasses off. That's what my mother taught me." Deion Sanders has since responded and told his team about this at practice earlier this week.
"I'm minding my own business, watching some film, trying to get ready, trying to get out here and be the best coach I could be. And I look up and I read some bull junk that Dan said about us.
Talk to us.
Once again, talk to us. Why would you want to talk about us when we don't talk about nobody? All we do is go out here, work our butts off, and do our job on Saturday. But when they give us ammunition, they unmesmerized and made it what? It was just going to be a good game.
And made it.
They messed around and made it
personal.
It was going to be a great test, a battle of Colorado, but they messed around and made it personal."
He said it in his own words. Now it's personal. It was personal last week against Nebraska. They went and covered that game. Now it's personal after what looked like a sandwich spot. Now it feels like they have gotten Colorado Buffalo's attention.
Well, and that's something that from a betting standpoint, if you are like me, was worried about the focus. Okay, now the focus has shifted. You could say that. But has it shifted quick enough or soon enough? Like, did it shift on Thursday, right? I mean, certainly Wednesday or even you're prepping on Tuesday, there was no shift. You know, it's lowly CSU. It's little brother. We got to get through this game. Now that it's shifted, okay, can the Buffs rev it up? I will say this, you know, Norvell, when he mentioned, you know, his mother, that's not how his mother, Deion's sensitive. His life surrounds his mother. And I mean, Deion has had some incredible pregame speeches, and the presence of this man has led this team and certainly has fired up this team and inspired this team to have some incredible performances so far. So if this is personal that way, then this is going to be a doozy of a pregame speech from Coach Prime. And if he fires up the troops, then okay, there gives you some ammunition, I think, if you want to lay the 24. But for me, having played in this game, it's just a dangerous situation in terms of overlooking this opponent this week as you got bigger opponents and bigger games on the horizon.
Yeah, we know rivalry games tend to be emotional. And I guess my question to you, Pritch, would be, is it possible for Colorado to continue to sustain this level of emotions? Because obviously an emotional week one against TCU, everybody counted them out, 21-point underdogs. That was well documented. Last week, emotional with the big Nebraska-Colorado, one of the biggest rivalries of my childhood, I remember at least, that's kind of revived with Matt Rhule and Deion Sanders. Now this week, another emotional game now with what Jay Norvell said. Like, at what point does Colorado go back to the emotional well and there's no juice left in the tank? Like, it feels like every single game is personal. Right. It's emotional. Like, there's a lot that's going on. And it feels like you got to be mentally and physically kind of exhausted by this.
Well, you could be. I mean, I think pressure will add to that. So there's been no pressure on CU. There's zero pressure. Like, nobody expected this to happen. But now you got First Take, you got The Rock, you got all this pressure, you got 60 minutes, you got all this attention, which, by the way, I think Coach Prime is prepping the players for this, and the players wanted all this. But there's something to be said about pressure and how you handle it. I think there's certain players, the headline players for Colorado, that can handle the pressure, but then it's everybody else. Can everybody else handle the pressure that's building and building and building? And I'm here to tell you, you know, as a guy who played for two national championships, the first year we didn't have any pressure on at all until the national championship game. And then the following year, there was pressure out the gate And we stumbled. We were 1-1-1, even though we were so good, right? I think CU, they're good. They have great players. They're well coached. But you just don't know about the pressure. And the pressure is building. It's building more and more each and every week. And I wonder if that will affect all the enthusiasm and certainly the energy that they played with so far.
Yeah, because it almost feels like from a pressure standpoint that there's so much pressure on them to perform just within the fan base, within mm-hmm. the alumni base, and like just all the excitement around this team. But there's also the pressure of there's a lot of people in the country rooting against this team.
Right,
a lot
right.
of people in the country rooting against Deion Sanders. So it almost feels like there's such a hyper focus mm-hmm. on every single Colorado game. And even for Alabama, as much pressure as Bama has or as Georgia has, there's weeks where they can kind of just take off. Like nobody's really paying attention to Georgia when they're playing Bryant, or nobody's paying attention to Bama when they're playing McNeese State.
Yep.
We're paying attention to Colorado. It doesn't matter who they're playing. Like, the opponent is irrelevant. The fact that they're on the field, eyeballs will be watching.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. I had enough.
Yeah, you had enough.
I had enough. First pitch.
Welcome back, Mike.
These are not your father's Colorado State Rams. Okay, there's where your argument falls. And who are all these people pulling against Coach Prime?
What do you mean? Who are
who's pulling against them? Seriously.
I mean,
don't you think they appeal to the mass of America? He does a great job of appealing across demographics.
But you know that whenever anything becomes popular, there's always people on the other side that are like, why are they talking about Colorado so much? Like, there's always the backlash.
Well, this is the biggest football story of the year, bigger than Aaron Rodgers, bigger than any NFL stories. Yeah. I mean, 60 Minutes is there. I mean, this is an amazing story, and it's been the most uplifting thing. So I don't think we're getting a lot of pushback yet.
Yet's the key word there.
Yeah. Now, if they go to Outson next week and win this week.
Well,
and
then I mean, if they win against Oregon, come on now. You might not be able to contain me.
You won't be here.
I'm going to be here.
You'll be like starving. Exactly. You're going to be traveling on Fridays.
But the thing about this team, though, is, you know, we had Hard Knocks for what, 5 weeks, five episodes. We get Hard Knocks with the Colorado Buffaloes every single day.
Yeah.
And that's probably why the sentiment or it's not sentiment. It's probably is it polarizing a little bit?
I think they're polarizing.
Yeah, that some people want them to fail.
Come on.
He's not polarizing. And then other people want to see CU succeed. So
I want to see them succeed, but let them lose a game. I will guarantee you all the people that have been quiet because they've been winning will come out barking loud. I guarantee it. All right, that is for hour number one. Hour number two, we're getting back to the NFL next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here's your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line here on a Football Friday, coming to you three wide from the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm, the VP of Operations here at Circa. Mike Pritchard, our VSiN NFL analyst, played nearly a decade in the National Football League, former first-round pick, and won a national title with the Colorado Buffaloes in the early 90s. Coming up 30 minutes from now, Dan Leberfeld of Jets Confidential, SiriusXM. He'll join us as we talk gangrene here in 30 minutes, how they will perform against the Dallas Cowboys, and what to expect with Zach Wilson now as the old new QB1 for the New York Jets. We'll get to Dan Leberfeld at 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 Pacific time. But while we have a little bit of time here, let's talk a little contest, shall we? The Circa Survivor, the Circa Millions, rolling along, heading into week two. Obviously, the contest line last night pushed with the Eagles laying 6, Vikings getting 6. So anybody who had those, you go ahead and get a push. And nope, you don't lose, but you don't win. But before we get to the Survivor, what do you think are going to be some of the more popular Circa Million plays this upcoming week for week two?
I think Cincinnati will be. I think Cincinnati will probably be one of the consensus plays. I have to go through Femi and look at actually what our numbers were. Because
Cincinnati's 3 in the hook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have them all in front of you?
Yeah, I have them all up.
I would have to know where the number was, which to your point, and Michael Lombardi often talks about this, we're trying to anticipate the closing number. So that's kind of a signal to people where we think the closing number is going to go. I think the Titans may be a sneaky play from some of the sharper bettors here. Consensus Chiefs at 3 could be a play since it's at the key number of 3. The halves are hard to lay, like the 3.5s. I don't think people are going to lay. 49ers, 7.5 probably won't be a consensus play. You might get some Cowboy money there. Not the Broncos at 3.5, but I wonder if the Broncos won't be a top five survivor play.
I could see
over
that.
over the Commanders. You might get some Dolphins at the 2.5, Browns at the 2.5. I like the Bucks a lot at 2.5. Yeah. So those are my. I'll toss those out there as possibly top five consensus plays.
Yeah, and last year I was doing a contest show, and certainly the consensus. was not the way to follow.
No.
At some point, right? That thing diverged big time. But here's where it does get tricky. And, you know, in terms, I like Tampa a lot this week. But yeah, from a consensus standpoint, I don't know if I would try to guess that because of how poorly that did down the stretch in this contest last year.
Neither of you guys mentioned Detroit, who we just saw beat the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. Mm-hmm. And we also saw the Seahawks get blasted by the 6.5 win total Los Angeles Rams. Do you think Detroit laying 4.5 at home opener, raucous environment, probably going to be the craziest environment of any game in week two?
Yeah, and we have a lean that way, too, with our customer base as well. You know, we have a big Michigan contingent with Derek's background and a lot of our team's background there. I can see that, but that's, I think also people are going to say that might be a bit of an overreaction. Remember, like, they played this game last year, and Seattle put up like 8 million points at Ford Field. They just never stopped scoring in that game. So that's a sneaky one, too. That could be, Femi. I mean, are the Seahawks that bad? They had, what, 3 total yards in the second half? They had no shot in that game.
It's terrible.
That, to me, was the most shocking result.
Yep.
Not that Dallas won 40-0. To me, that the Rams totally dominated them in Seattle was the most shocking result of the first week.
Yeah, Geno has not had the comfort of home field advantage up there in Seattle.
They've been bad.
They have been bad. Last year, they were poor at home, and then certainly to start out this year.
Is it really that? Is that an overrated thing, that 12th man? Was it really home field because the teams were just so good that or is that stadium actually one of the toughest places to play?
If you combine the stadium with the team being that good, then it's a home field advantage big time. We played in the Kingdome back in the day. Mm-hmm. And when we got it going, I couldn't hear you. And you're right next to me. I mean, you could not hear next to you. But it was a dome. It was a cement ceiling, too. And so all those sounds you could hear, it was a crazy environment.
When you were on offense, was the crowd quiet enough that it didn't disrupt the snap count?
Right.
So that's the biggest home field advantage is a dome stadium where you can disrupt the snap count of an offense.
Get
that pass rush.
1,000%. 1,000%. I think, you know, as an offensive player, too, you know, you try to just lock in and focus in that you really it's like that Kevin Costner movie, you know, turn on a mechanism, right? And everything goes silent. It truly happens that way. You don't hear anything because you're so focused, acutely focused on what your job is. But if you aren't that poised as a team, which there's several teams in the league like that, crowd noise can get to you and could rattle you.
You might not be old enough to, but remember when they would stop, the referees would stop, and they'd make the crowd quiet down because the quarterback would say, we're going to give you a five-yard penalty in those domes.
They did. I'm definitely not old enough to remember that.
You don't remember that? I remember that. They used to do that.
I was like, everyone's always been loud. Whenever
they would stop and say, you have to quiet down.
Or it was up to the referee at times because the quarterback would complain that they take it too far, and the referee would be like, nope.
Play. I was like, I've seen that at Wimbledon, but I've never seen that.
Oh yeah. We're old, Femi.
Even in Detroit, it would get so loud.
Pontiac Dome, the Silver Dome?
Silver Dome,
That's a new one. Yeah, I did not
Derek
know that.
About the, about the door. You know about the dock, the door, and how if you open that thing, what it does to the football. We'll get into that discussion another time.
All right.
They got us in a game one time.
Jeez. Yeah. Oh, these are the old quirks in the NFL that I was unaware of. How about Circus Survivor, though? This is one that Mike, obviously you can't play. We have working here in Circa. But Pritch, I believe you're through to week two?
Yeah.
Are you through? All right. Sweet. Yeah. So both Pritch and I are through to week two. Who did you use last week?
What I did is I went to everybody.
Entries? How many entries do you have?
I just have one.
One. Okay. Yeah. You both have one.
Just one entry. Right. Yep.
I thought Washington was going to blow it, but everybody used Washington. Yeah. So, yeah. Now, this week, it's interesting because Buffalo, I'm tempted. Because the thing about Buffalo to me, and, you know, the Raiders are banged up a little bit. Jacoby Myers, I don't think he's going to play. And then Devontae's got an ankle issue. Right. And it's the first true road game, I think, that way. I mean, the divisional game, Denver, you kind of own Denver. Buffalo, they are more the same, right? And I don't see this team evolving. In fact, all offseason, I talked about Buffalo kind of regressing. And we saw that in game one against the Jets, and in particular, Josh Allen. Josh Allen has the choke gene. He's had that for his entire career so far. I mean, think about some big games that he's played in and how he's choked. Now, he's come through in some big games too, but Miami pulling a string, I remember this vividly, fumbling the snap against, what was it, the Vikings last year?
The Vikings, yep.
And then, okay, now he's throwing the ball all over the place and then fumbling and all that stuff. So he's got a choke gene about him, but there's no evolution of, they still can't run the football. There's still no physical presence that way. Now, defensively, I think when Zach Wilson was on the field, okay, that defense could really get after it. But this, to me, might be the best chance to use Buffalo because as it gets more into their schedule and thicker into their schedule, I don't know if I can rely on them later on in a year.
I think that's a fair thing to consider. And I found myself in this position in week two. Last year, I used Denver. I think they were like 10-point favorites at home against Houston. I was like, oh, that should be an easy one. You know, I'll just go with Denver, go with the masses. And I was watching that game. I was like, uh-oh, this Denver, I'm glad I used them because I don't want any parts of this team. And of course, we all know how Denver's season ended last year. But I think Buffalo is probably going to be the consensus pick, I think, in Survivor. Just because the Cowboys have Thanksgiving implications. And then the Niners have Thanksgiving and Christmas implications here for those of you that are playing the Circus Survivor. The conventional survivors, I think Dallas will probably be the number one choice when there's no Thanksgiving. But I think the Bills are going to be the top choice.
Yeah, they will be because people will save Dallas.
Yeah.
To me,
San Francisco. You got
to
use both.
To me, the question is, do all these folks that said they were going to fade Arizona every week, do they have the guts to take that Giants team on the road this week against it? That's the big, I want to know how many people will do that because they were convinced before the year. We're going to fade Arizona. And I think people have multiple entries and they may designate one or more and say, I'm just going to do that with one of them. And so they will on one or two entries have the Giants. It's interesting to me. I think I get your point about Buffalo. Maybe they're not as good as we think, and let's use them now against the Raiders. But there's a couple home spots for them on the schedule where they're home to the Giants, they're home to the Buccaneers, that you could probably use them down the road. If it was me, I would have taken the Commanders last week, and I would take Buffalo this week.
Yeah. Would you go the conventional route?
I would take
route.
The conventional route still at this point.
Well, the thing about it, so game theory, do you risk entries at this point, or do you kind of hold them in the bag? Like, say you got 10, like say you max out, right? Or say you even have five. Like, do you use a couple of them you know what I'm saying?
I think you shove. I think through the first X weeks, whether it's 4, 6, or 8, you shove with your 10.
Yeah.
Unless you're so conflicted that you just don't believe in any pick. But the point you bought 10 entries is so that when you get down to 1,000 people, you have flexibility.
Right. Yep.
That's why you have the 10 entries. You're not trying to have 10 entries so you get to Thanksgiving with one or two left. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get to Thanksgiving with six, 10 left. I mean, that's where you have the big advantage. I don't think you can think about Christmas that much. I think you have to concentrate to get to Thanksgiving and then play it from there because it may not even get to Christmas just the way the thing plays out. I know it has every year we've had undefeated, but you never know.
Right.
You never know.
Yeah. No, I think because last week I used the Falcons and that was one of it wasn't like off the radar because 300 other people used the Falcons as well. But I think we're going to go and roll the dice again. I haven't decided which team I'm going to go.
Is Denver in your...
They're under consideration, but yeah. I don't know. I don't really necessarily lean that way.
Okay.
There's another team that I lean about that I'll tell you guys during the break here, but I don't want to share it over the airways. Yeah, it's a contest, all right? It's a contest. I can't have everything out there. We'll discuss some more week 2 NFL stuff on the other side. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network.